program, ladies and gentlemen. No more football. We are 2 weeks past the Super Bowl here, so we are in the dog days of the NBA and the NHL. But have a nice little outdoor game for the Bruins coming up. Dave is going to preview that. We're going to talk about your 14-13 Celtics, who are above 500. That is huge for this program. Matt will be throwing his victory parade for the 1-0 Celtics run that they're on right now. A little bit of Patriots later in the episode as well. What's going on at quarterback? Is there anything there? We'll touch on that. But first, to my left is the Shark himself, Mr. Dave Nardella. Dave, how are you?
Good, thanks.
And in the great state of California is Mr. Matthew Kovach. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing real well. Happy Ash Wednesday.
And in the Granite State, a happy belated birthday to the dog father himself, Mr. Paul Murphy. Paul, how are you?
Very good, John. Thanks for having me.
Of course. And I am your host, John Murphy. Let's get right into it with the Celtics team. 14-13, tough West Coast road trip comeback. Have two more tough games. And
currently happening.
The really bad one was that loss to the Wizards on Sunday. And I know that some of these players are coming back. This is one of the first times that the whole roster has been together in a little while. People are coming back from injury, coming back from COVID protocols. I know it's a unique situation, but you still are 14-13, and that needs to be talked about. We are a better team than that. So moving forward, I think the popular thing going into the 500 Celtics before last night's good win against the Nuggets, we won't discount that. That was a great win. The popular opinion around here in New England was to be anti-Celtic to the point where I wanted to go contrarian. Now I'm going to go pro-Celtic. You are the four seed. You're probably going to stay the four seed behind the Sixers, the Bucks, and the Nets. I don't really see you hopping up over two of them, maybe one of them, if you get hot here. So just accept the fact that you're the four seed going forward. What kind of four seed are you going to be is my next question. And if they can develop kind of this tenacious attitude going forward, that would really be something. Dave, go ahead.
I mean, you hit the nail on the head, John. I don't think there's much more progressing in terms of getting a higher seed for the playoffs. So you're going to have to just play like you did last night. It's just going to have to be a tough, hard style of basketball. And I thought last night was great. It was the first time in, you know, however many games this season that we've seen them come out in the third quarter.
Yes.
And really put their, you know, fist down. Because the two games before that, I think it was a combined almost 20 points. They were down, you know, it was close going into halftime. And then the third quarter, you know, they're down 10 right away. And it's just, that's just been their Achilles heel all season. And last night was a good win against a good team. Jokic was unbelievable and proved why he's probably one of the favorites for the MVP this year. So you won a game where Jokic was at his best. And that's a good sign. They just played much harder than they did the prior two games. And the thing is, my last point is this roster good enough to make it back to the Eastern Conference Finals? I mean, if Tatum and Brown really, really make a huge leap, I think so. But you're going to need more production from other guys. I just don't see how you can compete with those other three teams in front of you right now.
If you're just talking roster, my answer is no. Cove, yeah. Before I throw it to you, I'm just going to go back. It has to do with the team's attitude. What type of attitude are you going to be a team that other teams fear, right? Or are they going to see that weakness that they know they can exploit a Kemba, or know that your two young studs aren't quite the leaders that, you know, that we would like them to be in a postseason series against a Nets or someone like that? Cove, to answer Dave's question, is this team do they have a good enough roster to go back to the Eastern Conference Finals?
So Luke Bryan has a song called Down to One. For the Celtics, it's Down to Three. Brown, Tatum, and Marcus Smart. They own this team. And no matter what the riddle of Kemba Walker is on a given night, if Brown, Tatum, and Marcus Smart all play really well, this team can beat anyone in the NBA. Clearly, I'm out on Kemba Walker. We know that. Our listeners know that. But if you're of the mindset that this guy is still a big-time player that just needs time to find himself, and once he does, he's going to augment those three perfectly, consider the fact, a great stat that Jay King just wrote in The Athletic a couple days back. Consider the fact that Brown Tatum Smart and Kemba Walker have played a combined 28 minutes together this season. A ridiculous number. So poor health has contributed as much to this skid as bad ball movement, Matador defense, and anything else you want to blame. And again, heavy is the head who wears the crown. It's one thing to dunk on LeBron in a game seven or lead a spirited playoff run when you're a kid in a league of grown men, but it's another to have the outcome of every game tethered to your performance. Jaylen Brown has a sore knee, and Jason Tatum is still feeling short of breath from his bout with the flu a few weeks ago. Being a true cornerstone is difficult, and carrying a roster that's in transition is even harder. That's why LeBron James is so remarkable. I mean, he's been literally carrying mismatched rosters since George W. Bush's first term in office.
I love that.
Paul, anything on the C's?
John. See, I think the regular season is it should be important to the Celtics because they need seeding. Teams like the Nets and the Lakers, the regular season is an absolute waste of their time. I saw that the three stars on the Nets are averaging over 80 points a game. That's the highest in the NBA history of three players. So it's not necessary. They can go anywhere to win a game seven. But the Celtics have to take this serious. And Matt needs to stop making excuses for Jason Tatum about his $39 million a year and he's got the flu or whatever the heck he's got. 6 points. That's just not acceptable. The Celtics need to take this serious. The regular season means something to them, as it does to the Jazz and probably to the Nuggets and a few others, but other teams don't need to participate because they have a good enough team.
I like it. Culver, rebuttal.
Yeah, Paul, I'm not, hey, listen, you and I are in the same boat. I'm not making excuses for Jason Tatum. I'm stating that, you know, exactly what you said. When you're making close to $40 million a season and you are a marquee player in terms of your paycheck and some of your performances, you have to just find a way. You have to just find a way. And it's so hard, again, to be a truly valuable player in this league. I heard Colin Cowherd talk about it the other day, and he had a great point. He said that, you know, really, there's only three valuable players in the game, and then there's a bunch of talented stars, and that's certainly LeBron, Steph Curry, and he made a great point about Chris Paul. So, I mean, Paul, I'm with your point on Tatum. You know, it's one thing to say, hey, I want to command this big of a salary, and, you know, I want to be like Kobe, and I want to take fadeaways over Giannis in the biggest parts of the game and things like that. Well, you know, you have to figure it out. And, you know, clearly, you know, being short of breath, you know, is certainly not going to be a welcomed excuse.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Paul, I'll throw this to you. On the Celtics' next six games, give me their win-loss. Hawks, Pelicans, Mavericks, Hawks, Pacers. Win-loss.
3-3.
Wow, he is really down.
I saw what the Pelicans did last night to Memphis. They just slaughtered them. I don't think the Celtics will be able to stay with them. They'll split with the Hawks. They'll beat the Mavericks because they're a fraud team. I don't see much more than 3-3, John. I really don't.
Ooh, at that rate, let me, since I've been botching my math of late, that puts you at 17-16.
Yeah.
That ain't great.
When Dave said you're not going to move off, they're going to be in the 4-5 range. So they'll be facing themselves in the playoffs. If they're playing well, they'll win a round. If not, they'll go home.
I'm going to be optimistic here. I think I'm hoping they can build off of last night's game, and you get your guys back, you get a little healthier, you get Tice back, maybe Smart comes back. I'm going to go 5-1. I think last night's game was great. Looks like they're off to a good start tonight, and off a back-to-back. You come back Friday at home again. You win that. I agree with Paul. I think they're going to struggle with the Pelicans because we just stink on Sundays for some reason. Whatever, it's a mid-afternoon game. We have lost, I think, every single one this year. Mm-hmm. And then I think they win those last two games. I really do. So I'm going to be optimistic. 5-1.
I like it. Dave's got 5-1. I've got 4-2. I could see Cove saying 4-2. Cove, I'll let you speak for yourself. One-word answer.
Run the table.
Oh, I love it.
Really? highly optimistic. Not too much else on the Celtics. Let's switch right to the Patriots here. Quarterback situation. This is a development that came in late last week of the national talk around the Patriots quarterback situation was maybe they need to face the reality that their best bet is just to run it back with Cam Newton. There are a few points that I'll hear you out on, but I would like to just say no and have a better option. If it's your only option, I understand, but please, God, have a better option. Cove, you know, you wanted to talk on Jimmy Garoppolo. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, where the Patriots are at right now and how they got to this point goes back a lot farther than last March when Tom Brady flew south. You know, the talent deficiency on this roster can probably be traced back to the fall of 2017 when Jimmy Garoppolo was gift-wrapped to the 49ers for a second-round pick. I mean, go back and think about how high Garoppolo's value was. It was enormous, really, after his cameo in 2016. And the Patriots did nothing to capitalize on it. You know, Bill Belichick was in a spot where he knew that Bob Kraft was not going to move on from Tom Brady. If, you know, Tom Brady was going to move on, it wasn't going to be at Bob Kraft by, you know, the hand of Bob Kraft. So the fact that, you know, the Patriots had such an amazing piece and did nothing to capitalize on it, they're probably still paying the price. And when you go back, so many people thought that 2018 Super Bowl win against the Rams was really the cherry on the sundae for the dynasty. Really what it's done is it's bought Bill Belichick a little bit of time. At least you can say you've been a Super Bowl champion in the last handful of years, and there is still, believe it or not, a bit of a warm glow from that title. But, you know, once that warm glow kind of, you know, fades, you're going to start looking back at that Garoppolo trade, and you're going to start looking back at other opportunities that they've had over the last couple of years that they've squandered.
So this was just a talk about Jimmy Garoppolo, the former Patriot?
I think when you're looking at, you know, kind of you say, okay, hey, you've got a problem here on this roster, and how did you get to this problem? I mean, how did a team go from being...
No, we're solutions guys. We don't talk about the past. We don't talk about the Celtic mystique. We talk about them being 14-13 to start the season. That's what the show is.
Wait, so you're not talking about 17 banners and 22 retired numbers?
No, we're always on to the next one.
I wanted to be clear on that. Well, hey, listen, Garoppolo is a solution there, but, you know, you already know because you've seen him here. You know what the problem is with him. He's very, very fragile. And, yeah. You know, in a three-game cameo, he got hurt. He got hurt in the middle of the second game. The last time he played, I mean, this is a guy whose career, you know, again, with a lot of promise, and there's certainly been some nice moments, but here's a guy whose career has been marked by injuries. So I like Jimmy Garoppolo. If you can get him at the right price, he knows your system, and I think he might be a little bit more successful in New England. But at the same time, I mean, you're looking at a guy who's, you know, really – he's not Tom Brady, certainly not even Eli Manning or Brett Favre. So, you know, if you're going to bring in Garoppolo, just know that you're going to have a good backup quarterback, and maybe Cam Newton is a part of that. You know, I think that Jarrett Stidham is still the man of intrigue and the man of mystery. I mean, here's a guy that, you know, they took with a relatively high pick that they seemed to like at this time a lot last year. Bill Belichick's calling it Stid. And when you hear guys like Jordan Palmer talk about Jarrett Stidham, you would think that they were talking about John Elway. So that's just a very interesting guy, you know, as far as your whole, you know, quarterback equation is concerned. But if you're thinking about what's going on in this draft here in a couple months, I would not anticipate any sort of fireworks or big trades or anything like that.
Gotcha. Good stuff. Dave, why do you pick Cam Newton as your best option?
You don't. I would honestly prefer Stidham over Cam Newton just because, you know, he's had a couple of years now where he's just been riding the pine, coming in late games. He had a few nice moments this year, but I mean, you might as well go with the younger kid rather than Cam, who we saw can't throw it more than 10 yards. And I understand we can look back on that Seahawks game where he played great. He had Edelman. It all looked great after that, and I just don't see him carrying that through the whole season. So if you're going to do it internally, bite the bullet and start Stid. I agree with Cove. I don't think they're going quarterback in at least the top two rounds. Maybe they go third, you know, through six, but they're going to – it's it's either going to be Stidham or they're going to have to go out and get someone on the market. And I don't know if teams are going to be willing to give up a quarterback without getting a lot back. It seems like the whole Wentz rumors, how they're demanding two first-round picks, you know, a player to be named. Like, it's way too much for Wentz.
Yes.
So I'm curious, like, if we went out and get Garoppolo, who I think is kind of on that same level of Wentz, maybe Wentz is a little bit better because, of you know, he's taken a lot of hits in his career and tougher. But at the same time, I'm not giving up our future for Jimmy Garoppolo or Carson Wentz or any of those guys. It's not worth it.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to be tied to either of them. I'll take them on this team, but that's a lot to ask for. That's an easy.
It's going
to
be too big of a price, I think. But we'll see.
I'm not there. No, Cove. We got to pass it around. I'm not there yet on Newton, but a couple of the pros that I did hear of, you know, he didn't really get a full. We signed him so late in the offseason last year, didn't give him any sort of a receiving core. Edelman goes down. I wouldn't be shocked, and you as listeners shouldn't be shocked, if in a couple months I'm wearing my Cam Newton tinfoil hat and telling you about all the pros and none of the cons with him as the option. So I'm not there yet. Could be in the future. Paul, who's your thought? I know you said Matt Ryan a couple weeks ago. I think that's less likely, but go ahead.
John, a couple things here. No on Cam Newton. No net. I'd take Newton over Cam Newton. I really would. But let me say one thing about the Patriots, John. You know, with the COVID testing, if you go to Gillette Stadium, it is so well run. It is just unbelievable. And that Patriot personnel helping out the National Guard, I've had many people tell me how great it is, which tells me that the Patriots, and it's Patriots personnel, they're not laying down on the job. They're still showing a first-class effort. I just think that the Patriots are in good stead. They haven't mailed it in. They're really probably not that far away. I said Matt Ryan. Let me go to Garoppolo because there's going to be a big change. Everybody's going to move. And teams have figured out that if they get, I hate to admit it, but if they get a Tom Brady, even if they gave up three first-round picks for an Aaron Rodgers type, they could win the Super Bowl. There are teams out there that are a player away. Who those teams are, I don't know who they are, but they do. So don't give up on the Patriots. I think the organization has their finger on the pulse, and they will figure it out.
I like it.
Really good stuff. Answering it from the inside out. That was by no means a base level answer. Great answer, Paul. Cove, I know you wanted to say something. We'll let you wrap it up on the Patriots.
Just a quick note on Stidham that can't be missed. You know, when Jimmy Garoppolo came in that infamous Kansas City blowout in 2004, the team scored. They scored a touchdown. Rob Gronkowski fought hard for a touchdown, and the team had a spark when Garoppolo played. Go back and look at any good backup quarterback, Steve Young, Frank Reich, those guys in the past. Teams have a spark when the backup comes in. There's a natural moxie that walks in the huddle. And again, not to be tough on Stidham because it's been a limited sample size, but there's been absolutely no spark when he's come into games. And there was, I brought this up on a past episode, but NBC Sports Boston ran an amazing clip of Stidham and Cam Newton warming up before one of the last games of the season. I believe it was against Buffalo. And the caption on the tweet was, "Whom would you start tonight?" And it's Stidham and Cam Newton warming up, and everybody on the team is coming up to Cam Newton doing secret high fives like he's Orlando Cabrera, and they are so stoked to see Cam Newton. And nobody's talking to Jared Stidham. Nobody's patting him on the ass. Nobody's smiling at him. He looked like an invisible man on an island. And if that is, you know, any sort of window into what the team thinks about him, and, you know, maybe even more important, what the guys in that locker room think about Stidham, then that's certainly not an endorsement for 2021.
It's a great point. A lot of unanswered questions, and we'll see what happens in the weeks to come. Dave, the Bruins. I know you've been looking at this season, and you just say, you know, losing two regulation games to the Islanders, this Bruins team doesn't have it. That's what you've been yelling around the apartment. What are your thoughts on your 10-2-2 Boston Bruins going into the Devils game and a nice little Sunday Lake Tahoe game?
It's, you know, it's really not a lot of change since the last time we spoke. I think this could be a start of a little bit of a rough patch because they really – obviously they started off slow, but they didn't have their full roster. But now, you know, guys are getting hurt. They're starting, you know, a lot of their depth players with Clifton and John Moore and guys like that. So it could be a little bit of a rough stretch here. I like how we have a game tomorrow night before the Tahoe game, because we've played like one game. It feels two games in like 2 weeks. It feels like, and you know, the big lights of, you know, outdoor game, national TV, you know, Lake Tahoe against a very good team that we have had their number this year, but they're going to be hungry to come and beat you. So it's good we got that game tomorrow. It'd be nice to just, you know, even if it's a loss or something, get your feet under you and, you know, go hard at that game Sunday. But I think, you know, this is where injuries happen and stuff. So if they can just survive this next stretch, make it, you know, whatever, 500, you're still almost 10 games above 500. So I'm fine with that. So it's going to be a tough stretch. That's my opinion.
I like it. If the Bruins embarrass the Flyers on national television, they got to pack it in. The season is over. You just can't blow that many games to one team. Cove, anything on the bees?
I love Nick Ritchie this year, and I really like what Zugarowski's given you. It's so important. The COVID shutdown last year and then the subsequent Toronto bubble, I think kind of glossed over the fact that, you know, again, 2 years ago, this team was in the Stanley Cup Finals in Game 7. And then last season, before the shutdown, they were the best team in hockey. And again, you go into that shutdown, you have a, you know, less than stellar performance in that bubble that was overshadowed by the whole Tuukka situation. It was easy to forget how good this team had been. And, you know, we're quickly being reminded this year over, you know, your first sample size of 12 games or so, how good they are, how deep they are, and how these young players just continue to emerge. I don't want to talk about the eclipse in the locker room anymore. I think our listeners have had enough of that, but it's just so impressive to see the way that these guys are really owning the ice.
Love it. Paul, next five games, Devils, Flyers, Islanders, Rangers. What do you got?
I saw the Rangers' record today, so that's two wins. I can't believe how mediocre they are. And they're going to go 4-1.
4-1. I love it.
John, the one thing about the Bruins that I looked at some of the teams, but like the Dallas Stars have a very good team, and they were supposed to play 12 games in 25 days. And they've had three cancellations due to the weather down there. So there's a team that's going to be affected all year. They have a good team, very together team, but, you know, it's almost like they're sunk because of COVID. So the Bruins, if they just stay the course and do what they're supposed to do, they're going to be in tremendous shape.
Yeah, and then, you know, you basically got a shoe-in for Canadiens-Bruins final of what Dave was talking about. Good stuff there. Trying to think of anything else on the Bruins. Dave, anything?
I mean, one thing I was going to mention is you're playing pretty much like six teams the rest of the way. It's, you know, your island, the New York teams, all three of them, Philly, Pittsburgh, and Washington, and the Devils. And that's it. So I think it's, what, 7-8 teams? So you're going to get used to these guys by the end of the year. And there's going to be some good, you know, I think maybe the Flyers has potential there to be some really bad blood, some good rivalry games, just because these guys are going to be sick of playing against each other by the end of the year. One thing I saw today I just wanted to bring up was potential, you know, Brian Burke, the new hire in Pittsburgh, is saying he's going to probably move some big assets. And a couple guys down there are legendary in Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby. The Bruins were mentioned as a possible destination for Sidney Crosby. It is not worth it. I love him. Great player. Past his prime, and we'd have to mortgage a lot of our future. So I just wanted to get ahead of that rumor before it spreads. But that's all I had in the Bruins.
I like it. Way to get ahead of the news there. It's always important on this show, which is a solution show. That's what we do. We talk in the future and make wild predictions, like the Bruins are finished 3 games into the season. Those are the kind of things we say in this program.
Jake DeBrus stinks.
One of the things I love about this Bruins team, specifically of late, like we've talked about, is they're never out of a game. Cove, I know your favorite game for the Celtics was that Clipper game. I think that's the closest comparison you can have of a young Celtics core battling it out against a great team, and we need that to become the mantra for the Celtics going forward so they can be more like this Bruins team, because I know you try and make some parallels between those two, and I would love for it to be the case. It's just not yet with your Celtics being 14-13 and the Bruins having the best record.
Well, John, the problem is between the Celtics and the Bruins is the young kids on the Bruins have been paired with incredible veterans. It just, you know, hasn't translated into a championship yet. But when you're growing up around Patrice Bergeron and, you know, Brad Marchand, you're growing up around Zdeno Chara, you're growing up around Tuukka Rask. I mean, those are the kind of guys you want to grow up around. Unfortunately, the young kids on the Celtics had to deal with, you know, 24 months of crazy Kyrie. And unfortunately, Gordon Hayward got hurt and he just was not the same player that he was in Utah. So, you know, it's a little bit different. You know, when one family, you know, the mom and dad are the Huxtables and they're doctors and lawyers and the kids go to church on Sunday and then those kids, you know, are paddling at the head of the Charles. And then you got, you know, another family where the parents are dysfunctional and those kids are doing their very best to overcome that. So,
I mean, Matt, if Jeff Teague and Tristan Thompson aren't your Brad Marchand and Patrice Bergeron, I don't know what this team can do for you. Paul, anything to wrap the episode up?
I can't believe he said the Huxtables, because if you're talking a dysfunctional family, that's the most dysfunctional one ever.
Not on the surface.
More of a TV-based family, Paul.
Yeah, he wasn't talking about what was going on literally behind the scenes, I don't think.
Yeah, I wasn't talking about Bill Cosby at his palatial estate in Western Mass.
I was.
We know. Anything else, Paul?
No, that'll cover it, John.
Terrific. Cove, anything?
Peace, Rush Limbaugh. You know, whether you were a Rush fan or, you know, you're not, it's just a huge loss, because, I mean, this is, you know, one of the guys who, you know, really made the medium that we're, you know, broadcasting on right now. I mean, talk radio, guys becoming stars and, you know, eventually, you know, leading into podcasting and things like that. The coolest thing about Rush, and there's so much that we heard about him today, is that he never changed. He was incredibly rich, incredibly famous, had, you know, obviously his forgettable stint at ESPN when he made the ridiculous comments about Donovan McNabb. The point is about Rush, though, unlike guys like Howard Stern and maybe some of your favorite rock bands, he never changed and was Rush to, you know, really the day that he died. It's very respectable.
Love it.
Dave, anything else? Paul, it sounds like you have a rebuttal.
Yeah, well, this is on Rush. Rush was the publicist for the 1980 Kansas City Royals that went to the World Series. Then you get into radio.
Interesting. Interesting.
So I have to say, at one time, he was a regular person. That's the way it was. He came up through the ranks, wanted to have the most famous radio show. He's really not off by much. He's part of the equation. That's the reason talk show is what it is.
I would like to reserve the condolences part for people who were universally loved. Cove, I hear where you're coming from, but this is reserved for the Kobe Bryants and Jay Giles of the world in the Shark and the Dog In Memoriam final segment.
With Bruce Springsteen saying about his great friend Terry McGovern, he said that, you know, Terry, when you're listening to this, please know that you were roundly blessed and cursed.
Go ahead, John.
No, I'm done.
I was just going to say, you know, I think in the next few weeks here, it's going to be interesting because the NFL free agency starts. We start getting into, you know, the March Madness type of stuff. And I think we're on the up and up in terms of good stuff to talk about. And I'm not saying what we have been, but it's, you know, we're going to be getting more stuff in the next few weeks. And it's going to be exciting. Post Super Bowl blues, you know what I'm saying?
And to your point, Dave, I think it'll be quicker than most years of post Super Bowl blues. I love it. Great, quick, half hour episode.
Love it.
Not a marathon. Probably be a few of these until we get into playoff time. Gentlemen, as always, thanks for coming on. Gotcha.